Alelo Netcast, Roxborough Journal, Episode 4.
This Roxborough Journal comes to you from Hamilton, Ontario, and I'm sitting in a coffee shop in downtown Hamilton with Pennell Goodyear. And in this podcast, we're going to be talking with Pennell about what he's up to in the founding of a coffee shop called Freeway. Some of the noise that's behind you is coming from the folk who are coming in and out of the coffee shop as we sit together and talk about some of the work he's doing in downtown Hamilton. It's been about 15 years since I was in Hamilton. Back then, I taught at McMaster Divinity College, which was just down the street, and lived in this area. Hamilton was then and still is known as the poor cousin of Toronto, the cosmopolitan city just down the highway. It's also known as Steeltown. And this area where we're sitting in today is one of the poorest socioeconomic areas in Canada. And what brought me back was to discover that here in downtown Hamilton, there is not a what we would call a Salvation Army rescue mission, nor even a social service agency being set up by the Salvation Army for some of the poorest people living in Canada. But Pennell Goodyear, as a member of the Salvation Army, has in many ways practicing Luke 10, and with another group of people, he's moving back into the neighborhood. What you're going to hear is a description not of a social agency, but of a community of people moving back into the neighborhood to seek the good of the city and to practice the shalom or the peace that is described in Luke 10. So we invite you to listen and to engage and discover how some young leaders who are part of an emerging movement of the church are shaping their lives within a neighborhood in and with and for the people of that community. And one of the places that anchors all that they're doing is a coffee shop called Freeway. Welcome to the Journal.
Pennell, I'd just like you to talk a little bit about Freeway. We are here in Hamilton at the corner of King and
Wellington.
Hamilton is in many ways not known for being the center of whatever, but here we are in the midst of a place called Freeway, and you are Salvation Army?
Correct.
So here is a movement that began in the 19th century and seeking to serve God amongst people who were basically cast aside by the culture.
Correct.
So this is part of your life. So talk a little bit about what is Freeway and how did it come about and what are you doing here?
Well, the Salvation Army has had a long history of, like you say, sort of reaching out to the marginalized, those who are ignored by the church for the most part, urban center type places. Mm-hmm. And then there became a stage in our history where we just ceased doing that and not doing it very well and separating social service from church. And I think the Freeway is probably a new expression of an old idea of what the Salvation Army had started out to do. And with some new stuff as well.
Tell me what's behind the name. When I think of Freeway, I think, you know, eight lanes, thousands of cars. Well, we're not there. We're right downtown.
Part of it is because when I was first hired by the Salvation Army to plant this church, they were pioneering new ground in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. One of the rules that they had at the time was that you had to name the church based on its location.
Right.
And so you have things like Agin Court Temple, North Toronto Citadel, these places based on their place.
Yeah.
But we didn't have a location when we were planting. We didn't know where we were going to do it. Mm. But they were putting in the Red Hill Creek Expressway.
Oh, okay.
And 403.
Yeah.
And so we thought, if we call it Freeway, we can use that in some way because it's actually partly the location. Uh-huh. But at the same time, it has this sense of this, like you said, eight-lane thing. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, when we started, we were pretty hyper-modern rather than where we're perhaps at today in our thinking.
Hyper-modern.
Well, I think we were detoxing from what we had seen the church had become and what it was. Uh-huh. And yet we weren't really sure what we were going to be or who we were. So we were like a bunch of kids out trying to find ourselves and figure out exactly what Jesus wanted from us. Uh-huh. And so it ended up, we started off sort of being very technological and this kind of thing. So Freeway made sense.
Okay.
And now it's just a name that has stuck with us and it's who we are. And there it is. It's not a great story, but it's ours.
It's great. So in this journey that you went on from detoxing from being hypermodern towards something else. What was that journey? Can you describe it a little bit? I mean, God was doing something there.
For me, it was the sense that church never made sense. Mm. When I was a younger person, I couldn't figure out why I was so comfortable with my artist friends and my musician friends, and yet with church people, I always felt like I had just had to put on some kind of a show. It was kind of phony. And I also wondered why my friends could never go to church, mm-hmm. why they would never become part of the churches mm-hmm. I was at. And it didn't take long to figure out why. And so part of the reason why I wanted to start a church in Hamilton was to discover what it means to live out the gospel in a particular context.
So this was in many ways an experiment.
Complete experiment. In yeah. fact, I didn't choose Hamilton. It chose me.
Oh.
The Salvation Army had some seed money to do mm-hmm. a church plant here.
Yeah.
And because of other work I had done as a youth pastor in the Salvation Army, they called me and said, listen, we've got this seed funding. Would you like to move to Hamilton and plant?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And at that time they said, we want to see a Gen X church planted.
Okay,
they
so
were concerned
this
about
is the
decline.
Hyper-modernity going on here.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They were concerned about the 20s and 30s
yeah.
Lack of church attendance.
Yeah.
And this was sort of like one of their experimental projects
right.
to try to change that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So but, you came.
So I came. In my U-Haul with my family
mm-hmm.
and thought, I actually grew up in Toronto, so mm-hmm. I'm not unfamiliar with this area
right.
and Ontario and yeah. the city and yeah. this kind of thing. And we moved here, and at first we weren't sure if we were going to do urban or if we were going to be out by the university,
because
uh-huh. we knew that if we were going to try to attract younger people...
I put McMaster's where they are.
We started in Westdale Village.
Did you?
At St. Cuthbert's Presbyterian Church.
I know the place.
That's where we started the freeway.
You did.
And within about a year of us starting, God just kept speaking to us about urban.
Now, what did that mean? Because when I think of up near the university in St. Cuthbert's, which is a fairly affluent area of people who... connected with the university.
Correct.
You're not there now. You're in a very different context.
We're in the third poorest neighborhood in Canada.
Yeah.
Easily.
Tell me a bit about that shift. What was God saying? And
there was a couple interesting things happening at the time. There used to be 9 Salvation Army churches in downtown Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
When we started the freeway, there was none. They had all moved onto the escarpment, the mountain.
Is that right?
And
flight and flight.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And the reason was because they were a bunch of suburban people who were worshiping
coming in
downtown.
To do good things.
And then they just decided, why are we doing this?
That's
why don't
right.
we? They started to have unsuccess at reaching the neighborhood
yeah.
because they were commuting in.
Right.
And so they left. Part of it was the sense that there really should be a Salvation Army presence downtown.
Right.
But on top of that, I was reading a lot. Talking with folks a lot about what it means to be missional
mm-hmm.
and really, to be honest, as a young person, working out my theology of who Jesus is
mm-hmm.
and what he's about.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't get beyond the fact that he existed for the poor and that he made himself poor and dwelt among them.
Mm-hmm.
And so the incarnation began to really speak to me for us that we had the opportunity, because of being the Salvation Army, to do something downtown and... we could still live out our dream of reaching artists and musicians and
uh-huh.
kind of combine these two. Yeah. Social justice and the arts and deep community are
it's
kind of...
It's not either or, is it?
No, it's both and.
It's both and.
And I am really quick to say, Alan, that I don't think this is for everybody.
Yeah.
And I don't think that everybody has to become poor. I don't think everybody has to work in an urban center.
Mm-hmm.
This is the story God had for us.
Right.
And at each turn as we... try to figure out what he's saying to us, what Jesus wants from us. He leads the way and does miracles. You know, we've got so many stories along the way of where we never would have thought it would happen.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't intend on opening a coffee house. We ended up, the long story short, is buying an old CIBC bank building with no money.
Which is what we're sitting in right now.
That wasn't for sale.
It wasn't for sale. What happened?
We basically were meeting in an old church building
uh-huh.
downtown on Rebecca Street
uh-huh.
that was up for sale, and it got sold. And we had to come to a place where we're like, what do we do now? Our community was built on relationships and missionality, so all we needed was a meeting space. We couldn't find one downtown. Public schools down here don't allow you to come and meet. Community centers didn't really work. Nothing fit like that. Then we began to talk about, well, what would it look like for us to lease a space on a permanent basis?
Mm-hmm.
What could we do?
Mm-hmm.
And we came up with the idea of creating this art gallery, music venue, Third Space Coffee House.
Third Space, a lot of people will understand what that means. A lot of people won't. Third Space is, it's neither church nor...
Right. Basically, people generally have a place where they live,
yeah.
a place where they work.
Uh-huh.
Everyone needs a third space where they can talk about politics, build community, get some extra work done, simply
Safe
be
space.
In community.
Yeah. Okay.
North America is built on the idea, basically, that your spouse and your career bring you fulfillment as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And even without the Jesus factor, that's just not enough. I used to say part of the gospel was about deep community. I don't think that's true anymore.
Say some more about that.
That is the gospel.
That is the gospel.
Jesus came, I think, to teach us what it means for us to be in true community with God
mm-hmm.
and true community with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And this third space idea, a place where people can just be in community, talk about the issues of the day. For us here, like, we offer free wireless internet. It's fair trade products, organically grown products.
Yeah. When I hear a lot of church people talk about community, they're talking about what's going on inside the walls of that church. And they wish other people would come and join this community inside. You're saying something way different than that.
Yeah.
I'm hearing you say community is this neighborhood. And all kinds of people, whether they're Christian or not, find this a space where we discover together what it means to be neighborhood
Absolutely.
And community.
Our big idea is this. At the freeway, you can come to a worship gathering on a Sunday.
Yeah.
But that's not the point.
Right.
And most of our folks don't come all the time.
Yeah.
For us, community means, and I guess our ideal is that in this neighborhood, we would have a couple of families or a couple of people
mm-hmm.
on each street
yeah.
who are connected with the freeway.
Yeah.
We're living missionally to our neighbors, but we're inspiring each other. We're getting involved in each other's lives. We're encouraging each other to be who Jesus wants us to be
mm.
and living that calling in an authentic neighborhood. You know, when the early church started, it wasn't relevant because it had a working knowledge of first century culture.
Mm.
It was relevant because it lived and breathed amongst the people
amongst
it was
people.
Intended to reach.
That's right.
And the
yeah.
moment the church ceases to do that, it's not even the church, technically.
Yeah. So tell me some stories that will give me a feel of how this actually gets lived out here.
Well, this space is open from morning till night, run by volunteers. So in terms of our physical space, we encourage local artists once a month. We have a different showing. We have live music every week. We do fundraisers for big events. We have community workshops, which are free. People just come and hang out here and are in relationship.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those folks would be considered urban poor. A lot of them would be young artistic people. A lot of them would be elderly people who come in and hang out. So there's a wide variety. In fact, in terms of demographics of this area, the only demographic that we do a lousy job of really kind of touching on here are new Canadians.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something we're talking about. What does yeah. it mean for us to be community with them? But for us, it's really about joining with a bunch of friends and saying, we're going to go and live. We're heavily influenced by 1 Peter and by Jeremiah 29, the idea of being aliens in exile. What does it mean for us to live immersed in the culture without becoming a product of it?
Mm-hmm.
Building houses, planting gardens, making babies, giving our sons and daughters away in marriage, praying for the good of the city. These are sort of the metaphors, the ideas that have really shaped how we do things.
You're listening to the Roxburgh Journal and a Leyline Netcast.
Hamilton, Ontario, population roughly 500,000, is just 1 hour west of Toronto. It's the third largest city in Ontario and the ninth in the country. It's known as a steel town with heavy manufacturing industries, and it's surrounded by spectacular trails, waterfalls, and parks. Like many North American cities, it has an inner core that has been dying with few signs of revitalization. The following is an excerpt from a feature in the Hamilton Spectator, a local newspaper, by Bill Dunphy on the Beasley neighborhood. This downtown neighborhood, the Beasley neighborhood, is where Purnell Goodyear and the freeway are located. People come here from the four corners of our city, from Grimsby and Oakville, and yes, from Toronto, and New Brunswick and Nova Scotia, to say nothing of Kosovo, Kandahar, Sudan, Somalia, and Argentina. Some come here because they want to. But mostly they come to Beasley because they have to. They're poor and Beasley is cheap. In a consumer society, poverty robs you of your choices above all else. Beasley is 42 inner-city blocks, bound by Barton, James, King, and Wellington streets, a ragged urban quilt of row homes and high-rises, Victorian-era foundries and factories, apartments and parking lots, the whole of it edged in a tattered ribbon of battered businesses. By several measures, it's the poorest neighborhood in Hamilton, and one of the 20 poorest in the country. Unemployment is near 45%. And the average household income in Beasley is less than half of Hamilton's. The poverty rate is 2.5 times higher than the city's average. It was not always thus. This is where the city was born. Planner Mary Lou Tanner likes to say of Beasley, and this is where it grew up. Back in the 19th century, factories and houses crowded together on the new streets, fanning north from the initial core near Gore Park. Hamilton grew and prospered here on the streets of Beasley. But if the city grew here, it withered here too. Take a walk in the south end of Beasley, and the signs of that dead past are visible all around. Beneath a thin skin of asphalt, the bones of old buildings are visible, their foundations supporting parking lots or weed-strewn piles of rubble, where once brick walls soared, and the rooms rang with the roar and crash of massive machines and men at work. These days, the machines are gone, long gone, and so is much of the work. And when the work fled, the buildings emptied, and eventually their owners pulled them down to save on taxes. The city put an end to that dodge years ago, but the damage has been done. It had created a kind of no-person land between the downtown and the homes where people choose to live, Tanner says. Beasley has had a good run of it, but one by one, the foundries failed. The metal fabricators moved out, the textile mills shut down, and the wreckers and the auto body shops moved in. And more recently, the whole city's economy has shifted. And as the industrial heart of Hamilton shuddered and stopped and started again, it stopped pumping out jobs, the easy jobs anyway, the kind of jobs that paid anybody with a strong back, good hands, and a willing heart more than enough to raise a family and then buy themselves a little bungalow. But despite the flight of industry, people still come to Hamilton and still end up in Beasley. They come here for cheap housing, for free food. They come here looking for a job, hoping for a home. They come here for a chance for their children, a chance to carve out a new life and discard an old one. For some, Beasley's where you land when you lose your job, your marriage, and your health.
Well, people often ask the question, are you a church or a coffee house?
Mm-hmm.
And we're uncomfortable saying either one, because it's bigger than that. And that's only this physical space. What's been always important to us, and has been harder to maintain since we had a building, is the idea that success for us is not how many people come in, but how many people are we sending out.
And what is that? Tell me about that.
Traditionally, the systems that I've been in, you count the number of butts in the seats and the number of money in the budget, and those somehow are an indication of how successful your church is. For us, I guess what we would say success would be is, regardless of how many people are here or part of us, that each of us are being inspired to go and live for Jesus on a daily basis, being Jesus to our neighbors, not being Jesus for the agenda of having them buy a ticket to heaven and, you know, us closing the deal and more souls saved.
Yeah.
But simply for the agenda of us loving people because God said to. When I mentioned to you about deep community being the gospel, I mean, that's why Jesus says, you know, the most important thing you can do, love God with everything you have. Love your neighbors yourself. It's almost this sense that you can't have one without the other. They both mean the same thing. He also says, when you give a glass of water to someone who's thirsty, you're giving it to me. You'll always have the poor among you. We don't think we're going to cure poverty in Beasley. Third poorest neighborhood in Canada. Since 1973, millions of dollars have been sent into this neighborhood.
And not changed anything.
Millions of volunteer hours.
Yeah.
Great organizations.
Yeah.
Hasn't changed. It's worse off poverty-wise.
Yeah.
The poor will always be around you. And I think that's the point. The point is that in the poor, we see Jesus.
Right. You're also articulating something that says it's not that we celebrate poverty, but we're here to live together, whether we are poor or something else, and in the living together, we're going to discover together how to be a community of God's people.
Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, we're
so it's not about
we're changed by it. Right.
Yeah.
In fact, we have these little quips that we joke about, like we say that hospitality is the new preaching. You know, we believe that the power of sitting down with someone and sharing a meal and really investing in them in terms of getting to know them and journeying with them, that is what we used to think in the church evangelism did or preaching did.
Yeah.
It's like that is the gospel lived out and not just spoken. The hard part is that I think, me as a person, I fight pretty much every day to not be pharisaical. It's like I'm a religious guy, and my first instinct is what I've known.
Mm-hmm.
My first instinct is what I've learned. And most of that stuff goes completely against the gospel that Jesus came to show us.
You have to give me an example of that.
I value knowledge of the scriptures.
Uh-huh.
And I value sort of success the way the world sees it. More people means more influence. More money means more projects, these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those run counter, I think, to what the kingdom is really about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I need deep community to remind me of what we're really about. Because we tend to be, by nature, consumers.
Yeah.
And if we're going to subvert that system,
right.
The key has been for us is having a group of us who will remind each other of it.
Yeah.
What are we really doing?
So you are, in a sense, maybe not intentionally, redefining power. The power is not, I've got all this knowledge and you lucky people, here I am. Or power is not, we got all this money and all these programs. Power is a group of people coming together around Jesus and beginning to discern what's going on in this neighborhood and how do we join with what God's doing.
I think at the beginning, I was a naive missionary.
Mm-hmm.
My view was that we were going to bring relevant Jesus to the pagans who didn't have truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's changed for me. What I've discovered is that the pagans have brought Jesus to me. And I've learned so much about Jesus. And
from the other.
And he's changed me from the other in unbelievable ways. Ways
yeah.
I never would have expected.
Yeah.
That it's mind-boggling.
You are describing, in some ways, Luke 10.
The going out of the 70.
The going out of the 70.
Absolutely.
Into the towns and villages and sitting at the
Absolutely.
Table of the other.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact, it's like a lot of people ask, for instance, why don't you go to rich people and ask them for money in order to do what you do?
Yeah.
Well, part of our belief is that the poor own the kingdom of heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Part of our belief is that in us giving to each other from our out of our poverty, Jesus is going to do something incredible. And the beauty of it is, we continue to see it.
Can you give us some brief little vignettes of what you're seeing?
Well, there's some blatant examples of people who come in this place and are in visible need of help.
Mm-hmm.
Visible need of counseling or help or food.
Yeah.
Or I was giving this piece of advice to a few pastor friends not too long ago that it's amazing just the fact that we're open, what that does in terms of the difference between that and many, many churches in this town, who you go there and you can't even get in.
Right.
The doors are locked.
The doors are locked. Yeah.
Now, on the answering machine, they tell all about their Sunday services,
yeah.
but there's no human contact.
Right.
You can't get in touch with anyone. Just this idea of being available, being present in the place has opened up the door for people who you would never expect to not only receive ministry, but give ministry. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that when we really hear each other's story, we're changed.
Yeah.
We're changed, regardless of the story. That's the unique part, you know?
So a lot of it is about how do you listen to the other person's story?
How do you relinquish your agenda? It's like, I'm not sure if it's Peterson or Nouwen or one of those brilliant guys who said, you know, I'll get the quote wrong, but it's something along the lines of, I want to go around and just meet my neighbors and say hi and play ball, but my need to be important and to do something always gets in the way.
Yeah.
My need to be valued and for it to be, that is so true. It's like when we stop and really listen to people, man, amazing stuff happens. And it changes us. So we've met all kinds of people that likely wouldn't step foot in the doors of a church, but they'll come here, or they'll have us in their homes, and we'll just hang out. People say, what's your leadership strategy or what's your evangelism strategy? And we kind of quip, it's jokes and farts and wedgies, man. It's like we just...
Real life.
Throw parties.
Yeah.
And talk, and it can't be agenda-oriented. It's just getting to know people where they're at, and in that process, we're both shown Jesus, and we show Jesus.
How do you respond to the person who says, well, I guess it just sounds like I may as well stop preparing my sermons or thinking about teaching Sunday school class and just hang out in coffee shops and have conversations?
I say good call.
It's a good start.
We plan and we fly by the seat of our pants.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sort of like this idea, and I mean...
We have a Sunday service, you don't...
We do, and we've talked, this is the thing, we've talked along our process about killing that and still being missional community. And we've talked about killing leadership structure, and we've certainly got it down to very non-hierarchical, this is not a pastor-led church.
Yeah.
You know, and at each turn, one thing that's nice about the freeway is that it's a church that changes.
Mm-hmm.
And in an instant, we kind of, it's like a bull rider riding a bull, you know, and you kind of shift your arse a little bit, you push your weight over in order to remain on the bull. And the idea is when we first came, we thought we were bringing truth to the pagans.
Yeah.
Then we find out what we're actually doing is finding God,
that's what he's already doing
in this neighborhood.
An amazing thing is to begin to discover that it's not that we're here, because we're here, now God's here.
Right.
God's been here a long time.
God's
Spirit
been here.
Of God is up to something in this neighborhood.
And not just here. He's not just sitting dormant either.
Exactly. Yeah.
He's been working. He's been working to redeem creation here.
Right.
Long before
long
I came.
Before. That's
this
right.
Snotty-nosed kid is a blip on the graph.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's a nice feeling.
It's a great feeling.
I'm nothing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
yet I'm the unique of all God's creation.
Yeah. Isn't it gorgeous?
It's beautiful.
Yeah, I know.
I had a thought the other day. I walked out back and I looked at this guy who was visibly urban poor, big, nasty beard, dirties, picking through the garbage in our alley. And the thought dawned on me, if I live 100 years and I give all my money and I put my family at risk as I've done living in the neighborhood I live in, and I write 1,000 sermons, and I have 1,000,000 people come to know Jesus through the ministry here, and we do all these things. Jesus loves that guy as much as he loves me.
Yeah.
And would probably go to bat for that guy more than me.
Yeah.
And that feeling, that sense, that knowledge is so amazing.
It is amazing.
It's amazing that Jesus came for all of creation.
It's actually a pretty liberating thing.
Oh. And wants to redeem everything.
Yeah.
That includes the environment. That includes relationships. That includes, you know, systems and everything. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. What interests me about this place, and I've only been here a little while, is it's pretty evident. You have people who are in some ways pretty low functioning. At the same time, you've got PhD students with their thesis hanging around here.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Other. It's a real mix.
It's a weird demographic.
It's wonderful.
Rich and poor.
Yeah.
Artsy-fartsy and
yeah.
sort of mainstream folks, families, elderly, they're all here, they're all in the same place, and they're all sharing space.
And you know, when that kind of mix shares space, amazingly creative things will break out.
Oh, it's the kingdom.
Yeah.
It's the kingdom at its finest.
Yeah.
That's why when we started and it was the whole 20s and 30s thing, it really bothered me. It really bothered me that everyone was in their 20s and everyone was white, middle-class 20s. You're missing out. There's richness here in other political views. There's richness here in other religious views. There's richness in this community that is unbelievable. And God is at work in these places and redeeming these folks.
Yeah.
And you're like, and to get to be a part of it.
You get to be a part of it. That's the glory of it.
Why me?
So let me ask you, you're a Canadian. We're in Canada. And you're part of something called Resonate.
Yes.
Tell me what that's about.
Well, Resonate started a few years ago with a conversation between a few of us across Canada who were interested in talking about what the church could be.
Mm-hmm.
Later, most people define as missional or emerging or all these other words.
Yeah.
But basically, what does church look like in a changing culture in Canada?
Uh-huh.
Canada is a fairly neglected country in the church scene.
It doesn't turn up on the blogosphere.
Well, we're the U.S. smaller neighbor.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you even go into Wikipedia for the emerging church, it lists the U.K., Australia, New Zealand, the U.S. There's no Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And we really wanted to generate a safe place for people who were wondering about Jesus but didn't have a safe space to ask questions and to network together and to resource others, and we wanted it to all be free and it to be organic and chaotic. And so we basically started it, and people would say it's sort of like the Canadian emergent village, although there is emergent in Canada as well. It's just a group of friends talking about what it means to love God and our neighbors in a changing culture. And anyone can join. There's no membership fee. Anyone can lead, even. That's the way we work. Resonate's been great for me in that even 6 years ago when we started talking about what church could be and what this was, I was expecting people to think I was nuts. There wasn't a lot of conversation happening, even 6 years ago. There was some talk from people, but nobody was really doing anything. And to have this then band of friends, men and women from around the country who were asking questions together was just really what I needed at the time. And continues to be. I've made a lot of great friends there. Now we work with great folks like Alelon to do all kinds of stuff. And I think it's great because it's not about... this is one of the things I love about Hamilton right now too, is that there's this sense in a bunch of churches that it's not about our kingdom, it's about the kingdom. It's not about our tribe or our thing. It's not about our church even. It's about the kingdom of God and bringing shalom into this city and what that looks like. Resonate.ca is the website. There is online conversation through a blog, through a email conversation, but there's also regional networks. There is, we have things called Echo, which you did on Monday, which was a partnership between Resonate and Alelon, where we get speakers, people, thinkers in
for free.
Start conversation with a group of people who are interested. There's all kinds of other ways as well. There's, we like connecting online, but we'd rather sit down and eat pizza or drink coffee.
Have conversations.
So there's regional ones all over Canada, and you can look on the website there, connect with a person, a real person, email, phone call, and none of us get paid for it. It's not like it's a counseling service or, you know,
that's
we're just people who want to be friends.
So, I mean, I could, I mean, I live in Vancouver, so I could get online saying, hey, I'm here in Vancouver, resonate.ca.
Absolutely.
I'd love to have a conversation. I'm serving pizza on Thursday night. Why don't you come?
Exactly.
So that's what it's all about. That kind of movement, isn't it?
It's a network of friends.
Not a big program that you're going to find, but a network of friends.
No. Now, we've just recently started sort of this focus on church planting as well.
Oh, okay.
So we do we have a section on there for church planters.
Yeah, yeah.
We've started greenhouses all over Canada.
What is that?
They're basically networks for church planters or people who are interested in new forms of church that happen every 6 weeks. You basically get together. There's accountability built in.
Fantastic.
It's just a time to connect and network and hang out. And they've been pretty fun.
That's great.
And there's, you know, other church planting resources on there as well. We don't fund church plants and we don't fund conferences and things like this. We don't have money.
Right.
It's about
good
friendship and networking.
We will put a link up there so they can go to that link and connect and find out about the friendship. Pinnell, thank you.
Thank you.
This has been really good. Really
I appreciate the time and the energy.
Yeah, this is great.
You are listening to an episode of Alelon Netcast's Roxburgh Journal. Alelon is excited to announce that we will be holding two Summer Institute events this June. Fuller Seminary and Dupree Center will partner with us in a dynamic learning experience titled Practicing Missional Leadership, Bridging Great Ideas with the Messy Realities of Leadership. This institute will be held June 11 to 13 in Pasadena, California, and registration is limited. Our second institute will be with Carey Theological College and the Missional Training Network in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. The Vancouver event is titled Forming Missional Leaders in a Changing Context and will be held June 18 to 20. Please visit alelon.org for more information or to register.
The Roxburgh Journal is an Alelon Netcast. Executive producer, Mark Priddy. Written and produced by Alan Roxburgh. Line producer, Sarah Jane Walker. Edited and mixed by Bill Kennan. Original music, Substance Over Style. Webmaster, Brian Martini. Thanks for listening.